When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Fate's Wide Wheel, a Quantum Leap podcast with Sam and Dennis. Every week, we review an episode of the cult classic time travel series and decide whether it holds up to present-day viewing, and hopefully, we'll entertain you along the way. Be sure to check us out on our website, fwwquantumleappod.com, and also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under Fate's Wide Wheel. And be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Hello, everybody.
Hello. Welcome. It probably hasn't necessarily been a while, because I have a feeling that Dr. Ruth and Blood Moon will be dropped in close proximity to one another.
Yeah.
But it's been a while for us, because there's been a myriad of technical difficulties on Dr. Ruth.
There's been technical difficulties. There's been life. So we recorded the Dr. Ruth back on... August the 9th, I believe. And then aside from the technical difficulties, which I'll let you get into here in a little bit, we also had a tornado in Chicago on that following Monday. And you and me, we only live about a 10-minute drive apart from each other. But you lost power for 3 days, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We did not lose power that day at all. We lost it for like 10 minutes at midnight 2 days later, probably so when they were fixing the power.
Right, right.
Or making an attempt to fix the power. But also in that time, our oldest child, Harrison, he got very sick. Thought it was COVID because 2020. Turned out to be salmonella.
Oh, man.
So he was out. He was down and out for about a week. You went out to stay with Jessica's grandparents' house. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
While your power was out for all that time.
Yeah. It was. I mean, it was a crazy week, to say the least. And that's not even actually counting the first time that we recorded Dr. Ruth. Because we recorded it once before.
Yes.
It's basically been about 3 weeks since the first time we recorded Dr. Ruth. And we were doing pretty good. Like, we were kind of chugging along there for a little bit, you know, knocking a couple episodes out. And then all of a sudden, this happens. And one of the audio files was just unusable, unfortunately. So we knew we would have to re-record, which was great because it gave us the opportunity to get Karen Saxon, former guest, back on to chat with us about that episode, which was great. And then that audio file, while not unsalvageable by any means, just gave me all sorts of headaches. So it's just been a process, to say the least. But luckily, you know, we're back on track. Harrison's well, the power's back on, there's no tornadoes in sight, knock on wood. So it was a minor diversion, if you will.
Sure. I totally forgot about the first recording. It was my file. I can't remember what was wrong with my file.
You tap it like this.
Oh, because, I was finishing up coding boot camp and working on my final project. And so my laptop was loaded down with a lot of extra files. And it was something that I didn't realize until after we burned the file and I sent it to you. Yes, that everything was very choppy.
Yeah.
That was...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I would be able to work some sort of magic, but it was not possible. And it's so strange because in all the times that we have done this, you know, we've had a couple of errors along the way.
Sure.
Including the time I forgot to press record. But for the most part, you know, I mean, we've been pretty free of a lot of issues. So I just was like, you know what, we're coming near the end of the show, so it's only natural we probably have, you know, the B-man step in at least once and throw us for a loop.
We got to get this wrapped up before Halloween, before the B-man can step in.
Yeah.
Yeah. and just wreak havoc. Anyway, on a personal note, also last week, I got a vasectomy.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling okay. Really sore for the first couple days. Right now, just a little soreness, like directly, like right around like the incision. Nothing graphic, not to paint a picture or anything. But that's about it. The thing is, Harrison was sick for over a week, and by the time he got better, I really just had like one day to really think about it. Mm-hmm. And luckily, like my doctor, very cool, was very laid back about the whole procedure. And so it all worked out. It was great.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Slowly recovering right now. And just living life in the time of COVID.
I almost wish that we would have been recording Dr. Ruth now, because we could have had like a discussion about like healthy sexuality and choices about, you know, birth control, all sorts of, we could have really just spun that out. But I feel like in the case of Blood Moon, there's really nowhere to go.
The thing is, there's a lot of discussion about sex in Blood Moon. They just kind of,
that's true.
They just kind of talk around it, you know?
Yeah.
I will say, on that regard, I did the, what probably would have been an in-person visit before this year, but it was just a telehealth visit, like my consultation with the doctor. I was surprised how hard he tried to talk me out of it.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sure he was doing his job, but I mean, he threw it all, you know, it's maybe irreversible, but likely not. I haven't looked this up yet to see if he was just like feeding me a line of bull, but he was telling me if you want to get it reversed, that is a totally out-of-pocket expense that insurance will not cover.
Wow.
How much do you think undoing a vasectomy would cost?
I don't know, a couple grand?
$50,000 to $70,000.
No, wow.
That's what he told me. I haven't looked it up. He may be feeding me a line of bull. But he even went down the thing of like, God forbid, if something happens to your wife or you get divorced and you meet another beautiful young lady, blah, 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 blah.
Wow.
He laid it on.
That's so strange.
So, yeah. But then the procedure itself, like his assistant, I don't know if it was another doctor or resident or nurse practitioner or whatever his role was, he got me set up. The doctor came in. It was like a 15-minute procedure, snip, snip.
Yeah.
Yeah. He put in the local anesthetic, and I didn't even realize he had gotten started until I smelled burning.
Oh, my God. Wow. That's crazy. I have a friend, and I didn't want to mention this to you beforehand, but it was the first thing that popped into my head. I have a friend, and he told me that it was incredibly painful. Like, the first day or two was just, like, some of the most excruciating pain he'd ever been in. And so I don't know if that was just his, or if it was just he has a low tolerance for pain, or what the case was. But, my initial reaction has been like, oh, yeah, I've heard it can be painful. And I was like, well, don't say that, dumbass.
No. I mean, the procedure itself, like a few, you know, pinches, burns, you know, whatever. And then just, like, 2 days, and I texted this to you. We were texting back and forth. It just felt like, you know, I kind of think of the line that Sam lays on Buddy Wright at the end of What Price Glory, like what it feels like to get kicked in the crotch, how the pain just keeps growing and growing, and that sudden, that, you know, that sensation when it finally subsides. Like, you know, when you get kicked in the nuts and it really hurts at first, but then you just stay at this low grade pain for a few minutes.
Yeah.
It just, like, for 2 days, it was just at that low grade pain. Any sudden movement, if Harrison, you know, be playing rough, you know, brushed up against my crotch in the wrong way, other than that, it's fine, and nothing compared to the pain of childbirth.
Right.
Not near as invasive as someone getting their tubes tied. So, you know, Betsy kept showing me sympathy, and I'm like, I watched you give birth twice. Don't.
Yeah. You know? Right. I can only imagine. I mean, obviously it's not a choice. It's not a bridge that we have crossed yet in this household, but, you know, I can't imagine that there's really any any comparison for, like you're saying, for childbirth, or you know what I mean, through what the, not only physically, but just emotionally and mentally as well. I feel like a vasectomy, especially when it's done with thought and your choice, etc., that it's not going to be nearly as physically taxing. It's certainly not going to be emotionally or mentally tasking. Like, you know, you go into it eyes wide open, and you're just like, I'm getting this done. I'm doing this, and these are my reasons why. It's done. The pain subsides. It goes away. Life is beautiful.
Sure. I went in ready. I walked in there in sweats. I did not care about what I looked like. I did not want to wear jeans. I didn't want to wear anything tight. The nurse practitioner, whatever he was, like when he met me at the in the waiting room, he looked me up and down and goes, "Oh, you're ready." I was like, yes, I am. So here, how's this for a segue, Sam? So when I got off the chair after the vasectomy was done, the doctor left the room. He left me to clean up. There was a small pool of red right around where my butt was.
Oh, my God.
So with that in mind, let's get into Blood Moon.
Wow.
Dad jokes. Dad jokes.
This has already been an episode. We haven't even gotten into Quantum Leap yet. Well, listeners, you know us better each and every time you hit that download button. And we certainly are a lot closer now. But we are here this week to talk about Blood Moon, the 90th episode of Quantum Leap, directed by Alan J. Levi, written by Tommy Thompson. Our air date is February the 9th, 1993. Our leap date is March 10th, 1975. Sam is leapt into Nigel Corrington, and our location is somewhere near London. I don't think it gets much more specific than that. What's our TV guide description?
Our TV guide description. We're near London, but we are also near the Batcave. Remind me to come back to that later. TV guide description. Sam swoops into an artist who lives like a vampire and whose wife might meet a gruesome end. And in other countries, Germany, France, and Italy, it was simply known as Blood Moon in their languages.
Pretty simple,
straightforward. Not subtle. Speaking of not subtle, Sam leaps into a coffin.
Yeah. Which is actually, I think it's interesting because this episode, one of the things that and it reminded me a lot of Dr. Ruth in some ways, but one of the things that this episode does not necessarily get right is the tone. There's really no good balance between the, you know, sort of the comedy and the heavier moments. And I feel like had it been played a little bit more straight, the comedic moments would have landed better, and the drama, the tension would have existed and, you know, been more sustained, whereas I feel like it doesn't. That said, the leap in, I mean, how terrifying for Sam to leap into a coffin.
I mean, right? Like, if we hadn't been led, I mean, one, like, all the marketing for the episode, you know, blah, blah, blah. You knew exactly what Sam was leaping into. And that, and also, like, the leap out from the previous episode and, the you know, showing the vampire leap into the waiting room. Oh, man, like, how scary, I mean, how interesting would it have been if they would have, like, kind of teased, like, no, like, Sam leaped into, like, a coffin. A corpse, you know?
And even if you know, the obviously the marketing for the episode would have hit, even if the leap out would have shown him leaping into the coffin, that would have been enough, I think, for a lot of viewers to be like, oh, shit, you know? And then the very next day, they pick up their TV guide, and they're like, oh, it's a vampire story, I see. You know, but I think by sacrificing that for basically hamming it up and, you know, trying to get the viewers with, like, oh, it's a vampire story or whatever, I don't know, it's just, again, tonally, I think the episode misses the mark more often than not. We'll get more into that. But I do think that the leap in is very atmospheric and very potentially terrifying. There's a certain bit of dramatic irony, you know, where we know, but Sam doesn't know. And I think that it, I don't know, as I was watching it, I chose to suspend my disbelief actively and just allow myself to kind of be on that small little journey where Sam is in a coffin and doesn't know that he can just get out easily. And the minute he gets out, it's played for laughs. But there's like a beat there where you can kind of see the terror as he's, you know, scrambling around in the coffin, and it's really kind of nice.
Sure. I will say as a counterpoint, I think, aside from one moment that took me out of the episode, this episode is pretty consistent in tone. Mm. Like, it knows what it is. Like, we talked about with Dr. Ruth, like, how it switched back between, like, you know, that kind of thriller bad guy of the week, you know, Fatal Attraction. Fatal Attraction, that's a bad... You know what I mean. Between that and, like, the comedy and Doug and Debbie's thing. Tonally, it had a hard time shifting back and forth. There was one moment in this episode that I was like, oh, God, I forgot that. They went there. Oh, I'm kind of taken out. But other than that, I thought tonally the episode was pretty spot on.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's dive in.
Yeah, let's dive on in. So, Sam leaps into a coffin. He is greeted almost right away by, what's her name?
Alexandra.
I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, the actress's name.
Shay DeLynn.
This was her first on-camera role, at least listed on...
It sure was.
At least listed on IMDb. I've seen her, I think I've probably, like, seen her in passing on Will and Grace, on the other show that she was on several episodes of. But yeah, haven't seen her in much other stuff yet. But yeah, appropriately creepy.
It's funny, I remembered her from two things, because I was, for whatever reason, I was fairly addicted to Dharma and Greg.
That's it, not Will and Grace, Dharma and Greg.
And remembered her from that. She played Jane, and 16-year-old Sam had quite a crush on Jenna Elfman. I can't explain it.
I wouldn't say I had a crush, but I found her attractive. I could see it. And now the actor, what's his name? Greg Montgomery. No, Thomas Gibson. Yeah. He's been on Criminal Minds forever now.
Yeah.
Like, so much so I forgot that he once did comedy and he was...
Right.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, because I also recognized her from Boardwalk Empire. She plays Carolyn Rothstein in that. And then it's funny because I did not recall, although I can't remember if I was watching at this point, but she is in an episode of Orange is the New Black, which I enjoyed the first couple of seasons of quite a bit, and then just felt like it had a huge dip in quality around, like, season four or so. And I never got back on. I heard it got better again, but I just never got back onto it.
Here's my thing about Orange is the New Black. I really liked it when I thought it was going to be a one-season TV show.
Mm.
Because this was, like, kind of relatively early on in Netflix original programming. Yep. So I thought that they were going to do something really interesting and they were just going to do, like, a one-season show and just, you know, Piper. You just use Piper to introduce us to all these more interesting characters in the prison. I thought it was going to be a one and done. And then once I found out it was going to be more than one season, I was like, dude. I watched maybe two seasons with Betsy and then I dropped off and then she continued on.
Yeah. Yeah, Jess and I watched the first three seasons, and like I said, I enjoyed the first two seasons. The third season, you know, there were parts that I liked, but I don't know. It, ultimately, this isn't a podcast about that. So,
when has that ever stopped us before, Sam?
Yeah, right. it just kind of it fell off a table for me pretty hard, and I feel like it is unfortunate because, again, I heard some really good things about, I think, like, you know, when the fifth season hit or something like that, but I just couldn't really get back into it. Shay DeLynn, I think it's interesting because as I was watching the episode, I did kind of watch her with a good deal of scrutiny, unfairly or otherwise. And one of the things that I did kind of come away from or take away from her performance is that I think she suits the role quite wonderfully. You know, there's some stuff that I think is fairly surface level, that there's maybe a depth to this particular character that we didn't get. But again, it's a 45-minute television show, and there was really only one scene where they actually talk about her past. And, you know, for the most part, I thought she did a great job with the role. So, as someone who has made jokes about this particular episode in prior episodes of this podcast, So far, so good, I guess is what I'm saying.
I think, yeah, I mean, her, like I said, I mean, a lot of it's very surface level, but I think she does, yeah, like you said, she does really good with what she's got, and we'll get into it later on. Like, I kind of like her arc, like what they did overall with the character and how, like, they kind of acknowledge, like, Sam needs to do something to make sure that she's taken care of after he leaps out, because the person that he's leaped into, Nigel, is not a good dude.
Right.
So maybe we should get into Nigel. Basically, he is one of London's most eccentric artists, and basically he lives life as a vampire.
Indeed. Indeed. You know, one of the things that I will level at the episode as a criticism is that I feel, without getting to know a little bit more about Nigel, that we never, like, I can't decide if at any point they took this character or this person that Sam leapt into seriously, or if it was just a gimmick. And I think that, you know, like you said, we get kind of a hint that maybe he's not the nicest guy in the world, but ultimately we don't really get a good idea of who Nigel was before Sam leapt in. Like, it again, it's played for a gag and a gimmick. We don't really get a clear picture. It's like, okay, he's an eccentric artist.
Yeah, I mean,
thinks he's a vampire.
I mean, but they also kind of tease that he could actually be a vampire, because the big painting on the wall in the study or wherever, Al notes that he looks exactly like the guy that's in the waiting room.
Right.
So is it, I can't remember, like, the name of the character, is it, like, his ancestor who lived in that castle 300 years ago? Or was it actually him?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, and there's the lack of the mirror shot that we get as well.
I mean, it's a TV show, whatever. We've talked about this before. There are some leaps where Sam just goes on forever without ever actually having looked in a mirror.
Right.
You would think as soon as the first conversation that him and Al had about whether or not he's a vampire, the first thing that Sam would do would be go and look for a mirror or yeah. some reflective surface. Now, that said, to come back around to the first scene, I did take a note. I don't know if you noticed this, but after the opening credits, we come back and we meet Boris the Bummer.
Yes,
and,
we do.
And Alexandra goes off. And there is this really nice scene where we're getting to know Boris, and Boris is coming in, and cleaning off the coffin, wiping it down, putting the cover over it. They stand around that coffin, which is a pretty reflective surface.
Sure, yeah.
And they somehow manage to avoid getting Scott Bakula's reflection or shadow on that thing even once in that scene that I could tell. Kudos to the lighting director.
Absolutely. Actually, you know, another thing that I will say in support of this episode is that I feel as though the production values all around are perfect for this episode. You know, I think it's no coincidence that the episode was nominated for an Emmy for art direction, actually, in 1993. And I think it's well-deserved. I think that there is, you know, there is certainly a quality to the overall production values, to creating the world, the castle. It's just one set. You know, we don't go anywhere else besides the castle. And I think that it works really, really well. Same with the costumes. You know, the costumes are somewhat simple. Although the dress Claudia wears, I think, is spectacular. Mm-hmm. It's funny because this is an episode that Jean-Pierre did not costume design.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, I think that even something like that, like what you're talking about, I you know, certainly goes hand in hand with that. The fact that they were able to nail something, you know, like not getting a reflection or a shadow when they didn't want one. Boris ends up being such a wonderful character, such a wonderful little role.
I forgot my hat, sir. Yeah.
Rod Loomis is the actor. If he looks familiar to you, it's because he played Sigmund Freud in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I'm kidding. I'm just. But
maybe he'll come back. Maybe. Nah, he's not on there. He's not in the new movie. Not in the new Bill and Ted coming out. Anyway.
Sadly. He also did a ton of television prior to this. Had a stint on General Hospital in the early 80s. Also, of course, gets our Star Trek The Next Generation shout out for the week as Dr. Paul Manheim, the husband of a former lover of Jean-Luc
Picard. That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's why he looks so familiar. Yeah.
Hasn't done a lot recently. But, you know, according to what we can see here, he is still around. But it's been about 10 years since his last credit on IMDb. But yeah, I just think he does a wonderful job in this role.
So yeah, he's great. And then I think from there, pretty on, don't we meet Victor and Claudia like really soon?
We do, yeah. The episode moves along at a pretty good clip early on. It's interesting because I think that it actually does work well. Instead of there being a little bit more setup before the dinner party guests arrive and all that sort of stuff, I think that it works well to just throw us right in. Ian Buchanan plays Victor Drake. He had just recently completed a stint on Twin Peaks, which is a show that we've obviously talked about before. And there's been some crossover in casting and directing with that particular show. Here's a guy who has just worked forever consistently on all sorts of projects, you know, film, television, soap operas, drama, comedy, you know, et cetera, the whole nine yards. He started his career in the mid-80s with an episode of The Equalizer. He played Ian McPfeiffer on the Gary Shandling Show, or It's Gary Shandling Show, excuse me. That's different from the Gary Shandling Show. He also has gone on since then to do, you know, again, numerous guest spots. One of my personal favorites on his credit list is he played the Ultra Humanite on the Justice League television series. It was voice acting. It's a cartoon. And I just happen to love that particular character and his rendition of the character in the cartoon. Most recently, he's been seen on soap operas, starting with Days of Our Lives, General Hospital, The Bold and the Beautiful. He just wrapped up a stint on The Bold and the Beautiful of 258 episodes in 2017. And then he's got a few things in the pipeline that should be coming out shortly. And then Claudia, his wife, is played by Deborah Moore. And interesting note about Deborah Moore, her father is none other than Sir Roger Moore of James Bond fame.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I like that. I will say this about Ian Buchanan. The note I took is he strikes me as store brand Dean Stockwell. just by his look.
Sure.
Just by his look. He looks a little like Dean Stockwell. Or to be more flattering, like if they ever had done an episode where they showed Al somewhere between Jamie Walters and Dean Stockwell.
Yeah.
Ian Buchanan would have been a nice in-between somewhere along the way.
Oh, man. Maybe a little tall, but yeah.
maybe a little bit tall, but yeah. Their characters are so delightfully weird. I don't know if trashy is the right word. They are hypersexual, which totally plays into the vampire.
Yes.
Plays into the vampire stereotype. I had forgotten just how heavy they laid on the sexual overtones.
Yeah, me too.
I think the line is, I want to bathe in your greatness. Like, basically, Deborah or Claudia just flat out invites him for a threesome.
Yeah.
Before the ceremony, which I think is a Quantum Leap first and last. A permanent wave. Sam almost teases a threesome between the two twins.
That's right.
To drive Al crazy. But yes.
But
this is the one and only time in this series where Sam gets invited to a threesome.
Right.
And of course, Boy Scout Sam is turning that down.
Yeah. You know, speaking of which,
I turned down.
I think, well,
yeah.
No, I'm with you on that one. I think that they, you know, the interesting thing is that I really enjoy both of them in this episode, but the thing that I found so off-putting in the episode, and I hate to say this because it feels like I'm loving a criticism at Scott Bakula, is I just don't understand the choice for Sam to be as bumbling and everything as he is in this episode. It just doesn't make sense to me, especially hot on the heels of Dr. Ruth, where he's been, you know, over-the-top prudish bumbler, and now we have him here, and it's especially, it doesn't always work because it's contrasted with the scenes with Al, where it's like all of a sudden he goes from being kind of bumbling around with, you know, with the pseudo-vampires in the house, to then having to kind of be the skeptic, and the skeptical straight man to Al's goofy-ass, you know, believer, superstitious. So it just, I don't know, for some reason, I just really, really didn't like it in this episode.
Huh. It did not bug me. I mean, sometimes I will say, like, one of my biggest criticisms maybe about the series overall is I feel like, especially in the last couple of seasons, Scott Bakula leaned too hard into the bumbling, tripping over himself.
Yeah.
When Sam is uncomfortable kind of thing. But, yeah.
Yeah.
But over, like I said, there were early on when I was taking notes on this, I kept writing down one-liners after one-liners, and then I was just like, damn it. Like, this episode is just filled with a lot of great one-liners.
Yeah.
The back and forth between Sam and Al. So I think, like I said, overall, I thought this episode, like, knew what it was. I feel like this episode knew what it was more than, say, Curse of Tahotep.
Yeah.
Like, I feel this episode, like, almost hits the same beats of Curse of Tahotep. We're just in a vampire setting instead of a mummy setting.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that.
Like even down to, like, in Curse of Tahotep, where Sam decides, okay, there's a curse. All right, I'm going to go piss off the mummy, and I'm going to go invade his sarcophagus. And this episode, to prove to Al that he is not Count Bathory, he goes and he desecrates the grave.
Right.
Which in any other episode, I would say, that is so unlike Sam. But in this episode, eh, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the thing is that, like, had the comedy come from Al and Sam's interactions with Al, and had Sam played things a little bit straighter, and had Sam, you know, really embraced the gravity of the situation about trying to save this young girl, who's going to, you know, wind up dead. That's the thing. It's that the stakes, no pun intended, never feel quite real enough for me, because by the time things are taken seriously, they're still not even taken super seriously. Because, like, when Claudia is getting ready to apparently, like, feed on Sam, like, he doesn't really take it super seriously until, you know, like, right before she does it, and then Boris saves the day.
Sure. I mean, I feel like there's, like, one of the... It leans so heavy into being a genre episode that if they had taken it too seriously, like, it would have totally been weird.
Maybe. I don't know. But the problem with that is that for me, and certainly I understand that, you know, Quantum Leap gives us the luxury of exploring these different genres and giving us this tapestry of episodes, but like, there's still a certain grounding element. And I don't feel as though we really get that in this episode. We get one scene, in my opinion, that feels truly grounded. And that's the conversation between Alexandra and Sam, where he is kind of trying to, like, you know, say, hey, you don't have to, like, all this fantasy bullshit, you don't have to indulge in all this, like, you're a wonderful human being, you know, and she tells him, like, what happened to her and why she became homeless, all this sort of stuff. Like, that's the only scene in the show that it actually feels truly grounded. Everything else just feels so silly that it's just hard for me to care as much as I want to at certain points. Especially because at this particular point in the show's history, I am fighting to, like, really just be like, man, I wish we could have gotten that sixth season. Whereas so many times this season, I just see the wheels just having a hard time. That engine is really having a hard time turning over, you know?
Sure, I got you. I will say two scenes. Yeah, the one scene between him and Alexander that you're saying. And this is the scene where they went too far. And it took me out of the episode.
Yeah.
They killed the dog.
Yeah.
They killed the fucking dog.
Yeah.
I had forgotten that. And it, I mean, it's weird how human age works. Like, had they killed Borisov, I'd be like, ah, that's sad. Okay, but they killed Vlad.
Right, they killed Vlad.
And pretty much tell you that Victor did it.
Yeah.
With the blood on his thing. Yeah. And Al's line about what's left of the dog's throat. That's what took me out of the episode. I was like, maybe a step too far.
I suppose I just have like one of the notes that I took is that it just feels like they weren't taking the episode seriously, and that made me say, well, how can I take it seriously? And I don't mean take it seriously as in it should be a serious straight drama, but I mean it just felt like there was a little bit of a lack of care. It just didn't feel as though everyone really earned their paycheck on this one.
See, me over here, I'm trying to figure out how is this episode much worse than Curse of Tahotep?
I would say Curse of Tahotep is worse.
Or Portrait for Troyan.
Well, Portrait for Troyan is definitely worse.
See? To me, like, these three episodes are very much, like, if you were, like, to organize, like a little mini marathon or whatever, or a theme, Portrait for Troyan, Curse of Tahotep, and these three are a perfect trifecta of just
but
weirdness.
But here's the big difference. Portrait for Troyan has horrible direction and a horrible script and a not great performance from Deborah Pratt. Scott is incredible in it. Everyone else is credible and good and solid. And even Pratt does a good job. Like, the moments that, like, there are some scenes where she and Scott are together that the scenes, you know, really, really work. But the direction is terrible and the script is bad. Curse of Tahotep, the script is fairly bad. And some of the acting is fairly terrible. And it just doesn't hold together for me overall. But Scott is great, and you know, the villain, the Heavy, is good. The circumstances of the ending, I'm not a huge fan of. This episode, though, it's strange, because I actually feel like Tommy Thompson delivered a good script. The art direction is fantastic, the production values are high, Alan J. Levi's direction is great. The performances themselves aren't bad. It just feels a little phoned in.
I think that's fair.
It's not that the performances are bad. It's just almost like they sat down at the table read and couldn't decide if they wanted to make this episode a full-on spoof comedy or if they wanted it to be a little bit more serious with these bits of comedy, you know, kind of sprinkled in. And as such, it lies somewhere in the middle and it just doesn't work for me.
I see your argument.
And the biggest reason, and one of the big reasons why I will throw that out there is the stakes of Alexandra potentially dying, the killing of the dog, as you mentioned, and the fact that Sam pretty much just low-key kills a guy at the end of the episode, like, it's kind of like he pushes Victor off the side of the mansion.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does.
Victor gets struck by lightning and falls off the edge of the mansion.
Are you serious?
I am serious. I mean, this...
Well, Jesus Christ, that's even fucking worse.
See, this is what I'm saying. Like, this is an episode that knows exactly what it is. Like, even the way they set up the shot of Victor getting struck by lightning, like, it is totally an homage to old, bad 50s vampire monster movies. Victor raises the dagger up. He is about to stab Alexander in the neck. He gets struck by lightning just as Sam gets to him. Victor freezes in like this weird comic thing, and he just falls, like stiff as a board, straight back off the edge of the castle. Sam almost gets there, like to the point, like it's unbelievable, which is a big stretch in this entire episode. Like, Sam is so close to him when he gets struck by lightning, it's hard to believe that he wouldn't have gotten a little spark off the lightning, at least. To the point you thought he pushed Victor off. No. Victor got struck by lightning and fell back stiff as a board.
I hate this episode even more than I did before. Whatever.
That's one of the reasons when I was younger, I did hate this episode because what a cheesy ending. But then, like, lean into the genre, accept that it's kind of like spoofing like those old bad 50s movies. And it just... It really works as a genre episode, but it's almost to the point, like, I don't want to consider this episode canon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
But at the same time, I still think it's an episode that knows what it is better, and may get some hate mail on this one, I don't know. I almost think it's better than Dr. Ruth, and I think it's better than the episode that follows it.
I don't know. I have a stronger memory of Return of the Evil Leaper, so I'm on the fence with that. When I do my rewatch, certainly I'll let you know. But I don't know. This has just always been an episode that I've kind of been like, meh, whatever. You know me. I mean, I've said it from the very beginning, pretty much. I like Quantum Leap when it takes itself seriously. I like Quantum Leap so much better. And that's not to say that there aren't episodes that I can't enjoy that have comedic, you know, overtones. Double Identity being a great example early in the show.
Sure.
When the show didn't even really know what it was completely, is a great example of an episode that has some really great comedic moments and I think works well overall. And is a genre episode as well. But yeah, yeah. It's just, and it is too bad because again, I don't want to say that any of the principles are not good. There are some fun moments. The supporting cast does a really good job too. It's just, again, I think the tone is what turns me off the most.
Don't you want to pick up a copy of How to Spot a Vampire by Dr. Laszlo Fang?
Okay. Now it's funny you say that because I literally wrote the Fang book stuff is great. This is the humor I'm talking about. Like, that to me, like, that is acceptable. I don't mind that at all. It's just some of the other shit, I just, it drives me crazy. I don't mind the silliness. I don't mind the silliness of it. I don't mind that. It's just Sam bumbling around. It's just like, take your fucking job seriously, dude. Because I'm getting as tired as you probably are.
I mean, do you kind of wonder, did Scott Bakula sit down at that table read and he just read the script? And he's like, God damn it. 4 years ago, we were filming Color of Truth.
Yeah.
That was some really good television.
Yeah.
I'm laying in a fucking coffin.
Yeah. Look. Scott is a great guy and is rarely said a bad word about anything as far as I can tell. But that when you look at some of the episodes he got saddled with in the last two seasons of this show, it's like season four had so many mediocre episodes. Even if they were, you know, good hour-long TV dramas, they were just mediocre hour-long TV dramas. And then season five just had so many freaking gimmick episodes that as a fan of this show, it was difficult for me to care. It's like they lost the thread on me.
I get you.
And here's the weird thing. I'm interested to see how I feel about them upon rewatch. Towards the very end, Leap Between the States and Goodbye Norma Jean, like those two episodes, I actually was like, I was dialed in for as a kid. I remember like as a kid, and even on rewatches, I've kind of enjoyed them. And they're gimmicky as all hell. But in my memory, which is fuzzy, and I'll rewatch them and see how I feel then, in my memory, I didn't mind the gimmick because they were still decent episodes. And they had a certain weight, and they were taken seriously enough. Whereas you get stuff like this in Dr. Ruth that are straight-out gimmick episodes with stunt casting and you know, some weird whatever Blood Moon is. I don't know. It's just unfortunate. It's really unfortunate that this is where they felt like they had to go in order to keep the show alive. And to be fair, it didn't work.
Yeah, they are being bold. They are being innovative. They are being nude.
Yeah, they are.
metaphorically speaking. Right? I understand your hate. To me, it's one of those... I watched this episode when I first got the Blu-ray set. Actually, Betsy and I sat down and watched it together because I wanted to show her the worst episode of Quantum Leap ever.
Yeah.
And I don't think it holds that title. It doesn't hold that distinction.
No.
Because even as a kid, like, this is an episode that should have appealed to me as a kid, maybe, in a weird way.
Yeah.
I don't know. But even as a kid... I did not like this episode.
Right.
I enjoy it much more as an adult than I do now.
Sure. Yeah, I get that. I mean, I was into vampires. Like, I was, you know, like, vampires appealed to me. And again, yeah, you would think that this would be an episode that would have appealed to me, but it didn't. And I think part of the thing is like, I'm reminded, too, of episodes like Miss Deep South. Miss Deep South has, you know, puts Sam into some incredibly silly situations. And that are played, you know, for laughs, and he bumbles his way through them. But the episode also knows when to get serious, how to get serious, how to raise the stakes. And I feel like here, it's so, again, the tone is imbalanced enough that it's so much about this absurd, weird spoof quality that you're talking about. That Alexandra, the danger that Alexandra is supposedly in, gets completely lost.
I get that, but also it's like one of those things. Like, had they treated it seriously, you could have not had any comedy in this episode. Like, you would have had to have gone to a very darkly comic place.
Which frankly,
what this episode is, it's like Nigel Corrington takes a homeless woman off the street, marries her, totally tricks her, pulls her in. She's obviously, she's got a little, I don't want to be insensitive about it. It seems like she's got a little mental illness, mental disability going on a little bit. And he takes her in, like, knowing that they're going to kill her in some weird, freaky sacrifice kind of thing. If you take that too seriously, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a weird... Yeah.
I mean, I guess in a way I would find that more interesting, though. I personally, and it's a very subjective thing, I would have found that take for Quantum Leap more interesting because it's done... Because that would be something a little bit more different than what they normally do. You know? Not that there haven't been darkly comic situations that have occurred in other episodes, but I don't know. I just... When you have moments, see, the other thing that's weird, and I think it kind of exemplifies what I'm talking about, when Sam takes the drink from Victor.
Sure.
Is Sam really that naive? Especially after 5 years of leaping through time and space and being in the situations that he's in. Would he really take this drink and toast with this guy? And furthermore, if he is, why not explicitly, rather than implicitly, show Victor poisoning the drink? Because we see it. We know. Sam doesn't. Again, kind of like the coffin gag, that's dramatic irony 101. The audience knows something that our hero does not, and now the suspense is in, will he take the drink? Won't he take the drink? What's going to happen? And instead, it's just... That's the other thing. Like, the episode never really goes for it when it could go for it on some of this stuff.
Sure.
Same thing with, like, deciding not to open the coffin, deciding not to definitively state whether or not Nigel is a vampire because they were afraid to do that because they didn't necessarily want to alienate viewers. It's like they don't go places that they could go, and it just makes the episode feel kind of unfulfilling.
Sure. I mean, I guess they could have faked the audience out. Instead of having Boris come back and save the day, Sam could have acted like he was poisoned.
Sure.
And then when Victor got over him, then he comes up, you know, punches him out and goes off to rescue the day. But it's a nice excuse to bring Boris back, even though it's a horrible excuse.
It is. But it is. But again, it's one of those moments that I actually enjoyed.
Yeah. I forgot my headset. Yes.
You know, and another thing is, it's funny about that moment, too, is I actually enjoy Sam going for the teeth.
Yeah.
Like... I liked that because, again, it actually decided to make the statement as opposed to a coffin that never gets opened. It's like Chekhov's gun. It's like, why go through all this rigmarole over a coffin to find out who's in this coffin if you're not going to actually tell us who's in the fucking coffin? You know, why set all this vampire shit up if you're not going to actually tell us who's the vampire? You know, again, it's classic. It's Chekhov's gun. Whereas, in this case, the fangs, we see the fangs. The fangs are bared. She's going to take a bite out of Sam. Sam has to know. He's got to know. He's got to know for our benefit just as much as his own benefit. And what happens? He takes the teeth out, and we get this definitive, they're fake. They're fake teeth. You know,
I love the line, either they're fake or she's got the dental plan from hell. I've always loved that line. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
No, but I agree with you on that. Again, that moment just works for me on all those levels.
I get you. Yeah. Doesn't bug me that much. I felt like when I was younger, the teeth thing was kind of hokey.
Okay.
But
I can get that.
From a plot standpoint, like, what, like, if Boris hadn't knocked Claudia out, what was she going to do, you know?
I mean, I think she was going to bite him.
I mean, was that, like, foreplay? Was she going to, like, bite him playfully on the neck and then, like, start other stuff while he was tied down? I don't know.
I mean, that would make sense, whether or not that is what was going to happen. I mean,
but I don't know. We never find out.
Yeah.
Speaking of Boris coming back to the castle, we do get two or three establishing shots of the outside of the castle. Did you recognize this castle?
I did not.
I forget this detail every time, and then I'm reminded every day. It's something that is ingrained in my head from childhood. That is the exterior of 1960s Wayne Manor.
I'll be damned. How about that?
Because I forget that every time, and then when it popped up this time, I was like, wait. So I paused it, and I was watching it on my laptop. Side by side, I pulled up a picture of Wayne Manor from the Batman TV series, and it is the same. Yep, same one.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Now, the inside, I thought I saw it on IMDb, and then I lost it. I don't know if they were filming on a set or if they were actually filming on location for the interior of the...
I'm going to assume set. It kind of had that set feel to me.
And that, I mean, that's one of the, like, I've always, I think you're right, and that's one of the reasons why I have an issue with a lot of last season episodes we've talked about before, is that everything seems like it's more on a set.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, so we get to the end of the episode.
Yes.
Victor is dead. He was not pushed. He was struck by lightning.
Yeah, how about that?
Deborah is being taken off. And this is, and it's like, I know, like, we're wrapping the episode up and everything, but it's the detective, like, giving, like, the heavy-handed line of exposition of, well, we're basically going to believe that everything Alexandra says, what she says, that story checks out, so there's no reason to bring you in, sir. We're going to see you off. And then I do appreciate, like, the little bit of seriousness in the episode where, like, Sam and Al kind of have a powwow and, like, it's not a good idea for her to be here.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, if I were to gripe, like, Sam could do more to turn Nigel in. You know what I mean?
Right.
That would seem to make more sense.
Right, because again, we're left with that question of, like, what happens when Nigel comes back? Like, what's to stop? Especially because when you think about the way that Alexandra has already been manipulated and basically emotionally and mentally abused, and even physically, really. Like, when you think about that abusive nature of the relationship, and clearly Nigel preyed on this young girl from a disadvantaged background who is clearly, you know, damaged in some way.
Sure.
What's going to prevent him from coming back? And like so many of these manipulative and abusive fellows will do,
yeah,
you know, just going right back to her, you know, well, I've changed, you know, obviously things are different now. You should come back. Everything will be okay. And then, you know, 3 months from now, she ends up dead anyway in some sort of weird ritual blood sacrifice.
That, I mean, if Al hadn't done the thing that they do with all the episodes where Al says how everybody lived happily ever after, you could very well take that away.
Yeah.
That could happen. How would this be for an ending, though? The last episode ended with us seeing Nigel in the waiting room. What if this episode had ended somewhat similarly, and this is just something that popped into my head? What if Sam decides to turn himself in instead of just, like, whatever, like, when the detective gets there, he's like, no, I am a bad person. This is my part. I want you to take me in. The detective handcuffs him. Sam leaps. Nigel leaps back in. Turns into a bat and flies out the fucking window. Full circle.
Oh, God. You know, I guess that's the thing. The other thing that's weird is that here we have a show that has a science fiction / fantasy sort of conceit in order to explore all these different avenues. And yet, when the show actually comes up against these more science fiction-y kind of elements, it always cops out or fails miserably. You know, Troyan, Tahotep, Blood Moon, you've got your ghost story, your mummy story, your vampire story, and they all fail. And part of it is because, like, again, Troyan they take seriously, but it's just kind of not a great script and there's some other problems with it. You know, but Tahotep and this one, it just, they don't get the tone right. And then, you know, you think about like the Evil Leaper stuff, which again, it is kind of your classic, like, sort of sci-fi, you know, kind of, yeah, but one could certainly argue as to whether or not it actually works. The only time they really steer into something sort of metaphysical and sci-fi where it ends up really, really working all the way, in my opinion, is Mirror Image.
Yeah. Because they go to, like, a very abstract...
Yeah.
Is this real? Is this, is this in Sam's head? Is he between leaps, as I've heard people throw out there?
Which really makes me wonder if we had gotten a season 6 and they had decided to do the futuristic sci-fi thing that they were going to do, would it have actually frickin' worked? Would they have known how in the hell to tell that story?
Because I don't think Don Bellisario would have known.
No, neither do I.
And this is kind of like going off on a tangent. I want to see a new Quantum Leap in whatever iteration they want to bring. Don't put it in Don Bellisario's hands.
Yeah.
God love you. God bless. Kind of like Gene Roddenberry didn't know what to do with Star Trek.
Yep.
In his last few years. God bless you, Don Bellisario, you're past your time. Let's take this wonderful idea, these wonderful characters, and let's see what somebody else does with them.
I completely agree.
Because you have a great point. Because, like, had they gone on and gone to a more sci-fi season 6, I don't know if Bellisario would have been able to pull it off.
Yeah. No, I think that, quite frankly, and I'm not saying that these are the people to do it, and I know that there are probably a lot of people, especially listeners to our podcast, that would not like this at all. But quite frankly, I feel like if you were going to do the show and it be a straight, like, reboot, not a continuation, you need to have, like, somebody like, you know, Kirkman and Orci or J.J. Abrams. Like, you need that kind, that kind of pedigree on this show, and not... Quite frankly, like, basically, if you got somebody like Don Bellisario to write the show now, you would basically be pulling writers from CSI to write Quantum Leap. And in 2020, that would not fucking play. Right? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, a couple of things that are worth mentioning real quick just about the episode so we can cover all the normal bases. It is interesting that we have a dog named Vlad. Vlad Tepish, of course, is the historical basis for the fictional character of Dracula. Of course, Victor's last name is Drake, which, again, has also been used in numerous other mediums, including novels, as a last name for the character of Dracula, sort of a nom de plume of Dracula, mm-hmm. an alter ego, an alias. That's the word I'm looking for. We get a shout out to Count Bathory, which of course is not a real historical figure. When it comes to the dagger, we have the Countess of Bathory, who was indeed the real historical figure. The stories that are told about Count Bathory in this are very similar to the stories that have been told about the Countess, which are all apocryphal. There's no evidence that she actually did those things, although she was a pretty awful human being.
Sure.
You know, Al touches on all the normal myths about vampires, crucifixes, garlic. Oh, it is worth mentioning. There are two really just cherishable moments that do occur between Sam and Al in this episode. It's when Al is describing Nigel, pale skin, beady eyes, and Sam responds like, sounds like you're talking about yourself, you know,
yeah.
Which is just a beautiful little moment between the two of them. And then later on, when Al is talking about from the book, like the oversexed, you know, all this sort of stuff, blah, blah, mm-hmm. and Sam is, of course, sounds like he could be describing a hologram, which those playful moments between our established characters do work really well, and I did enjoy those. I don't want to, you know, don't want to just hate on the episode the whole time.
I gotcha. And we talked about this off mic before we started recording. The writer Tommy Thompson, he noted this. This is in Matt's book, and he noted this when he was on the Quantum Leap podcast back in 2015. That he was not proud of this episode or Revenge of the Evil Leaper, which comes up next. He wonders maybe if he was going through some personal stuff at the time, but
right.
I don't know. I feel like I feel like this is an episode that is stronger than Revenge of the Evil Leaper for multiple reasons. At least that was my memory the last time I did a rewatch. It was like 3 or 4 years ago, but yeah, we'll see when we cover that next time.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. It's worth noting, speaking of Matt, that Matt does actually enjoy this episode, and Tommy Thompson did go out on a good note, and mentions a couple of the things that you mentioned too about kind of the homage to the 30s, you know, horror films from Universal, etc. There are a couple of folks online that seem to like this episode quite a lot over at Al's Place. There's actually a vampire blog they cover like all forms of vampires in the media, and so this is the only episode of Quantum Leap that they reviewed, but they are familiar with the show, so it's not like this is the only episode that they've ever seen. But they were quite complimentary of the episode, and there are, of course, a lot of people that didn't like it as well. Al's Place has a number of messages on the message board about saying it was their least favorite. Our buddy over at the MacGyver Project, he kind of, it seems like, falls a little bit somewhere in the middle. It's definitely towards the bottom of his rankings, but he's a little kinder to certain aspects of the episode. Really liked Ian Buchanan and Deborah Moore quite a bit. So, I think that I probably fall somewhere. I'm not going to say I hate it, so I'm not one of those folks that's like, it's the worst episode ever. I'm certainly not going to be, I liked it, and I might not even be in the middle, but maybe I'm a little bit just, you know, below the middle, the middle ground.
I would say you're like in the bottom 10. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seemed like,
you know, I don't know. Maybe I might even place it a little higher than there. I might be able to name 9 episodes at least that are worse than this one.
Portrait for Troyan.
Oh yeah.
The Americanization of Machiko.
Oh yeah.
Hurricane.
Oh, I actually kind of like Hurricane.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. See, to me, Hurricane falls into that, like, they're like just like mediocre episodes that do nothing. To me, that's what Hurricane is. Hurricane is a stock footage palooza.
Sure.
They shot 5 minutes of actual footage for Hurricane. The rest is just old shit blowing in the wind.
With a Scott Bakula voiceover.
Yes. And 3 minutes is the ex-girlfriend breaking down at the end of the episode. And 1 minute is him and the new girlfriend making out.
Okay. Well, don't forget the party that he tries to break up. Dude,
and that's
could you imagine reviewing Hurricane in our COVID world about a guy having to break up a party that shouldn't be happening? Ah, oh, the parallels.
Oh, God. If there is ever a Quantum Leap series that comes later, I mean, they gotta...
Oh.
Pardon the bad pun. They gotta touch on COVID.
I gotta tell you this right now, Dennis, and I mean this. Like, he could spend a lot of fucking time in 2020 alone, much less any of the past, you know, 25 years that they never got the chance to explore on the show.
I've seen more than one tweet or meme that says something to the effect of, I really resent living in a time that future historians will specialize in.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Anyway, maybe we should say on that note, if we haven't telegraphed it, So at the end, Sam does find out that he is very likely, indeed, a vampire.
A vampire.
He has no reflection when he looks in the little platter. He whispers to Al. He leaps, and he's on the hood of a car in some weird Flash-like superhero getup.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's funny because I literally, as I'm going back and thinking about this episode, I do actually remember kind of being okay with it. I don't know. I'm sure I'll watch it and probably not feel the same way at all. But
sure.
As of right now, I don't know.
Maybe we should allow for the time that we are in right now, and it's hard to have
right
sympathy or grace for a lot of extra stuff. So I don't know. I kind of liked it. I enjoyed it. I was thinking, like, if I was like to show someone who had never seen Quantum Leap before, and I'm like, here, let me show you like the broad range the series had. Here's Color of Truth.
Yeah.
Here's Blood Moon.
I mean, that's about that's about the opposite end of the spectrum as you could possibly get. What's interesting too is that in both instances, I feel like there are a couple of episodes better than The Color of Truth.
And there are
some episodes that are worse than Blood Moon, but they both represent, like, Color of Truth represents the best of the best, whereas Blood Moon would represent the opposite end of that.
Yeah. I mean, Color of Truth is not a perfect episode, especially looking back through a 2020 lens, but, like, as far as, like, the scope of what they were trying to do.
Sure.
With the series versus Blood Moon.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you 100% on that one, and I think that, you know, it's fascinating to me that the show could explore so much in those terms, because you do have, you know, you do have these complete opposite ends of the spectrum, and I think for the most part that is a positive thing, and I think that there have been a number of comedic episodes or episodes with moments of levity or bumbling Sam even that work really well for me. I just happen to think that this episode and Dr. Ruth are not two of those episodes.
They are not. Although I would buy a copy of How to Spot a Vampire by Dr. Laszlo Fang.
Fair.
Fair. On that note, maybe we should wrap it up. Get ready for
next time. Next time. Yeah. Next time we'll be talking about the return of the evil Leaper. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to Return and Revenge, actually. I think it'll be fun to dive into those episodes just because, you know, they are a rarity in Quantum Leap, in so much as, you know, the last... We had Trilogy, which is, you know, a nice three-parter, but it followed one self-contained story, was focused on this town, whereas the Evil Leaper stories, you know, really kind of veer us into sort of this myth arc territory that a lot of shows didn't have at that time. You know, we're still pre-Buffy, we're still pre-X-Files when that shit got dialed up to 11, you know, and then of course you had the glut of shows like Lost and everything that's come since. So I think that other than maybe a show like Star Trek The Next Generation, which had their, like, their Borg arc, you know, basically, or their Q arc or whatever, and then of course Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5, which would be built around arcs, I don't know. I'm interested in kind of exploring that element of the episodes in the context of Quantum Leap.
Sure. Yeah. I may not enjoy those episodes as much, but just like discussing the mythology, like you said, I'm looking forward to that. Might be worth going to pick up my copy of Knights of the Morning Star.
Right.
That was the Evil Leaper novel that takes place in between.
Yeah.
Deliver Us and Revenge, and so it's been years since I've read it, but the author somehow does a decent job of somehow fitting an encounter between Sam and Aaliyah in between the two televised leaps, and it's somehow, like, it works. It doesn't disturb continuity too much.
Yeah.
But if not a chance to, like, read the entire novel, but go back and read a synopsis. But how about that for homework? Listeners, viewers,
yeah,
prepare for Revenge of the Evil Leaper. Pick up a copy of Knights of the Morning Star, and we'll be back with you hopefully sooner rather than later.
That's right. We're going to finish this thing. We got seven episodes to go, man.
Before the other Quantum Leap podcast, we need to do it before Halloween.
That's right.
All right. On that note, thank you for sticking around this long. And we'll see you next week, next episode, next download for Revenge of the Evil Leaper.
Return. She's got to return, that's right, before revenge can
She's got to return, and then you got to revenge. Return, then revenge.
All right.
Take care, y'all.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.